is here in Studio 4. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. What goes on in Studios 1, 2, 3,
nothing.
5, 6,
absolutely. 7? Nothing. Absolutely. They collect dust.
Really? No, you're the only thing?
No, there are some other programs.
I mean, I keep meeting people that listen to your show.
Isn't it strange?
I know.
It's hard to imagine. Lots of people say that for 35 years.
You know, they said that about your father and grandfather, too.
Absolutely. Hard to imagine. You were down last week talking with Washington types about Sandy Money, the governor of New York, the governor of New Jersey, also Joe Lota, head of the MTA. This week, president says he's going to, or at least it's leaked. It's leaked that the president is going to ask for
50. The way the process works is the president sends what's called a supplemental appropriations bill to the House and the Senate, and then they decide how much, or I guess they could do even more.
They could add, right.
They could add. And they could put all sorts of terms on it and that sort of thing. But it starts out in the White House. Sean Donovan, who used to be our housing commissioner and went to Washington and now is the head of HUD, which is the agency Andrew Cuomo used to run when he was in Washington under the Clinton administration. Sean will advise the president. The president will send a bill to Congress. No matter how much it is, everybody will yell and scream, it's not enough, right. And then others will say, it's too much, it's just wasted, and back and forth, and the usual political process, and you'll come to some kind of an agreement. The request is, and I think the administration will follow the format, of one number for New York and New Jersey. New York will include New York City. We've given to the governor, Andrew Cuomo, the governor, our numbers. I assume different towns in New Jersey have given to Governor Christie the same thing.
I think his number was $39 billion.
Yeah, and Nassau and Suffolk County will also have talked to Andrew about what's needed. And then the MTA is another thing. In our case, the only numbers I'm really close to are our numbers, and we've really very carefully tried to come up with good estimates of how much business lost, how much it's going to cost to recover, how much we think FEMA will pay, because that's in those numbers. Some of the qualifications are already there. If you, we think the rules are there. We'd have to make sure people qualify. We'll see what Congress does. And the two things that you have to look for, number one is the total number, whatever that means, which is on the front page of the paper, and how that is split between the two states and between the states and the counties or cities. And then the other thing that is really important, if Congress were to say, we'll give you this money, but we have to find offsets. Offsets is a term. They one time Congress passed a law saying they will not spend any more money. If they have to do buy new things, they'll stop buying old things, if you will, in context of your own budget. But the total amount of the budget will be the same. And then they carved out things they really care about that don't qualify, that are outside of that process.
And then they ignored the whole thing.
But offsets would be devastating because they'd say, well, we're going to cut another program to New York, another program to New Jersey. And so there you're just swapping dollars. Might as well stay right where we are and not get any help. So hopefully that will not happen. And I talked to, as did Governor Christie and as did Governor Cuomo, a number of leaders on both sides of the aisle in both houses. And all three of us will, I'm sure, make a number of calls again. But first, we have to wait for the president
sending a bill.
Yeah. And what'll it be?
Are you at all concerned that monies from Washington that come to the state of New York that are for New York City never end up down the end of the pipeline in the same aggregate amount?
I think if you had Andrew here, he'd say, of course they do. And if you had, and I will say, of course they don't. The truth of the matter is, if you look throughout the 50 states, mayors across the country will always say the money does not get down. All the stimulus money that, remember, that was big chunks of money sent from the federal government. Many cities will argue they never got any of it, or they got it for things that were pet projects of state legislative government and not of the city's priorities. In the case of New York, there'll be a little bit of that, I think, but I don't anticipate a big problem. Look, Andrew Cuomo has an office here in the city. He's as New York City. He may live in Westchester, but he's a city guy. He understands. And for all of the stuff that everybody wants to have us have big fights, there are things we disagree with, but We'll work something out. I'm not worried about that.
You were talking yesterday about rejiggering, waterproofing, if you will, the city of New York. Do you think you can?
Well, there are, number one, the monies we asked for, the first part of it is to make up for, to fix things that were broken. Then there is the remediation, I guess is the term used, things you can do. You cannot, in a practical sense, I don't believe, or if you could, it would be decades of environmental reviews and work and to build something that closes off
like
New York
dikes
Harbor.
Or what, you know, whatever, you, levees.
They say, oh, well, they have these flood barriers for the Thames River in London. They have dikes in the low-lying countries in Scandinavia. Yes, but it's the mouth of the river is small in the case of London. They don't have big storms, excuse me, up in Scandinavia. I don't think that is short-term practical. Long-term, I'm still skeptical, but you talk to the engineers. It may very well, sometime maybe you could do that. The kind of things we're talking about here is when you have to rebuild your home, building it higher. We have, for example, Willets Point. Requirement is you build it higher. Governor's Island, we've raised the park there. Brooklyn Bridge Park, we built it to the standards of the city. The boardwalks, which are always controversial, people want wood, but you look, most of the, not all, but most of the wood was carried away in the storm. Most of the place where the sidewalks were cement, it looks somewhat like wood. It's not exactly the same, but they survived. Right. And you can't constantly, and if the oceans are going to rise 2.5 feet in the next 40 years, you can't use things that cannot stand storms. You have to build things that when there's a storm, they survive the storm, because there's always going to be storms and you can't stop them. You remember, most of our damage was done on the south coast of Staten Island. Coney Island, Breezy Point, and the Rockaways. That's not where you could build a barrier, unless you want to start build a barrier from the Florida Keys to Newfoundland. You know,
there's a very interesting diagram in this morning's Long Island Newsday, and it shows the water level from Montauk and along the south shore of Long Island, and also Staten Island and the Jersey Shore, and it also shows the water levels in the Long Island Sound, again, moving east to west.
Right.
And in the western corners, as you point out, the eastern corner, 5.5 feet above usual. In the western corner, in Hudson River, Staten Island, 15.5 feet. So you can see how the water just piles right in there.
As the water comes in and it gets narrower, it piles up. It has to go someplace.
Has to go someplace.
Can't go wide, goes up, goes high. And so there's things you can do. There is some places where adding sand and building jetties works, although keep in mind we've been doing this for the last 100 years, and they work sometimes, and then another storm comes in from a slightly different direction or a slightly different intensity and they take it away. The thing that everybody's got to understand is that if you live close to the shore, you are going to have weather problems. People have been living close to the shore. Maybe that started out because that's where a lot of their food came from the rivers or oceans or bays. Today they do it because it's a great place to live. People like living near the beach. There's always going to be risks. And we've had a lot of people call and say, oh, I know how to build housing that would withstand anything. Yes, that's true. But two things. Number one, most of the people that live near the ocean don't want to live in a high rise. They just don't. And they won't. And number two, they have houses there. We only lost about 350 or 360 houses. There's an awful lot of damage, 10,000 houses or something like that. But in terms of houses that were either carried away or can't be rebuilt, the number is 350. So in most cases, we're not starting from scratch as they did in other places, like in New Orleans, where you have this enormous, just you could, as far as the eye could see, it was empty. Here, there's a house gone, but the house on either side is still there. And so what can you build higher? Yes, but if you build too high, your neighbors aren't going to be too happy. They're going to be looking under your house, and you're going to block the sun. And there are lots of practical aspects. And also the building codes of before, of how close you could build houses, either didn't exist or permitted things. For example, permitting retail in some neighborhoods. Today, you could not build a new store in those neighborhoods. We want the stores back, so we will, the city council working with Christine Quinn, we will raise the height limit. So if you raise your house, you don't get the height, they don't have to chop off your roof. And number two, we'll be able to rebuild stores where we need them. So there's some things you can do. You could put your hot water boiler and heating unit for your house not in the basement. You
right.
could move it
second
move
floor.
It up. Second floor, except that a lot of these houses don't have a second floor, number one, or the second floor is small and they don't want to give up a closet or half a bedroom or something. So the practical aspects of, yes, I can harden it, but now I did talk to a woman the other night. We had a thank you dinner for a lot of the social service people who've been working to help everybody. It was a nice way to just get together, and I went from table to table and chit-chatted. And this woman has a house, it's a summer house only in Breezy Point, and they've been flooded 6 or 7 times. And
well,
you know,
with that statement in mind, should there be a red line? That if you live on the ocean, the water side of the line, you have to take a much higher risk than if you're on the
other
side.
Well, number one, you do. I mean, if you live on the other side of your imaginary line, you get flooded out.
There are a lot of people screaming, take care of me, my, you know, my house went away.
Well, the only one that will issue flood insurance is the federal government. And there's a reason why private companies won't issue it. It's because the risks is just too high. I suppose there is some premium at which a private company would issue it, but nobody could afford to live there. So I think the real answer is you just hope, you take that risk, you hope for the best. I think most people that live in those areas understand it. They're not happy when it happens to them. I don't know that we are prepared. And it's not just New York.
No,
whatever you
no.
do here, you do all along the coast,
sure.
you know, and the Gulf Coast and the Pacific Coast. And you can be smart in terms of your design. You can be smart in terms of raising your house. But there's an awful lot of houses that are in place, most of them here. There's something like 68,000 houses in Zone A. We lost 357, I think, is the number we kept. The numbers.
I think I read this morning, too, they're going to change. They're going to expand Zone A.
Well, because some parts of Zone B got flooded, and the 100-year floodplain that FEMA had, where it says 1 in 100 chances or whatever of a storm, the storms are bigger, and they're going to have to expand it, and we'll expand. And the next time we ask people to evacuate, it will be a bigger area. The tricky part is that if you make it too big or you do it too often, people won't listen to you the next time. And right after this, two-thirds, maybe three-quarters, maybe more than that, did evacuate when I said get out. The people that, 2 days later, there was a snowstorm, and a lot of people called me and said, you have to evacuate everybody. You have to put out another order. And I said no, because it did not look like it was going to be very strong. And if you do that, the next time there's a real disaster.
Nobody moves.
That's exactly right. And the same thing we kept an awful lot of people in place in nursing homes and seniors' homes without moving them. Why? Because it's very dangerous to move people when they're very fragile. And yes, a disaster could have happened, but making a disaster... And
the clearing of some of the hospitals in the powerless lower Manhattan was amazing.
Yeah, nobody ever did it.
It was amazing.
Shows you what New York can do. And a lot of these, there is no right answer. If you ask for an evacuation, it turns out you didn't need it. The next time, people will die. If you don't do it, the first time, people may die. And it's the same thing in moving vulnerable populations. Also, it takes a long time to move some people. You know, if they're infirmed and that sort of thing. And there's just a limited amount of time between when you realize just how big or not big a storm is going to be, and you have to make the decision, and then you have to ride with it. You can't panic and you sit back and you say, I hope I made the right decision, but we made it. That's what making decisions is all about.
All right, Mr. Mayor, let me take a break right here. We're going a little long, 23 minutes after 8 o'clock, and let Michael Bloomberg here this morning. We're kind of up against the clock a little bit here. Hudson Yards, very exciting project.
Oh, this is the Gold Coast of the West Side. The two places, you're going to see businesses starting to pick up in the World Trade Center site, so Silverstein will do well with these buildings, I still think, and it's coming back, or he's making some progress. And then the far west side, the city put in money. The state wouldn't do it. The city put in $2 billion of our taxpayer money to expand the number 7 line down the west side. All of a sudden, there's mass transit over there. Now it's an attractive place. Steve Ross, who runs Related, one of the biggest development companies, has a contract to develop the Hudson Yards. The Hudson Yards are where the trains, the MTA and the Long Island Railroad trains, are stored.
They're not going to be moved. You're going to put a deck over,
a deck over them. The first big and related won the competition to have the right to do that. The MTA will get a lot of money out of it, and it will get an enormous number of people over there. The first building that's going up is a building not on the platform, but right next to it, Coach. The luxury goods maker is going to be the anchor tenant. It's something like 47 stories and 1.7 million square feet. And then once that goes up, they're close to, I hope, close to the next building. With the next building comes the platform, because that's got to be built there. That allows us to hopefully build what we call the Culture Shed, which is another venue for fashion shows and cultural events in the city, which would be phenomenal. We could always use another
Does this abut the Javits Center?
It's basically across the street.
Across the street.
Yeah, fundamentally. It's all sort of in the same neighborhood.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
This started back in 05, I think, when the city council approved the rezoning of the whole area, and we agreed to pay for a subway to go over to down 10th Avenue. And once the platform goes up, you'll not only be able to build the cultural center, but then over closer to the water, residential. The views of the water is where you want to put residential, and the business stuff more towards the
center,
east,
yeah,
and
right.
The center. And now you have the High Line, which
goes
right.
I was just going to ask you, that's
the
right
new
there,
High
right?
Line, the last piece, CSX, the railroad company who owned it, gave it to us. And the Cultural Shed will be sort of more on the eastern side, near this new building that's going up right now, or is just starting. This whole thing is going to create something like 23,000 construction jobs and a few thousand permanent jobs, but a lot of residential and commercial and office space will be built in this whole thing. And it's the future of our city.
And just to the south of that, there has already been an explosion of residential and commercial.
I was at a dedication or a brown breaking for one building, and where somebody's babbling on the stage, waiting for me to babble on the stage. And I was looking at the number of new apartment buildings.
It's amazing.
It really is. The Trump development up in the 70s and then all the way down. You don't realize. And then you take a look over Long Island City. There's a lot over there. The city's population is growing. We're doing well. We have our problems. We've got to get through Sandy. And not everybody shares in the good news. In the growth, but we are going in the right direction.
All right, Mr. Mayor, hang on here. Let me take another break on the half hour. Again, looking for your input. If you've got a question, good morning to you all. 23 now before 9 o'clock in the morning. I heard you mention yesterday that phone service, especially in Lower Manhattan. The Verizon folks say it could be May. I think they've changed their tune since.
I've had conversations with the CEO. That's just not acceptable. Cannot live with that. This is a utility that we depend on.
The reason is the water.
They lost 95% of their copper wires. They now are trying to replace all those with fiber. Makes a lot of sense. Should do it. It's the wave of the future. But we cannot wait for a time frame like that. I don't care if they got to string cables down the street above ground. We've got to find some ways. There are jobs and our whole economy downtown is dependent. No company can live without it. If you think about just how reliant we are, we're reliant on electricity and we're reliant on telephones. When the power goes out, the cell towers, both AT&T and Sprint and Verizon, everybody, they generally have a battery to back it up. Battery lasts, let's say, 8 hours. After 8 hours, there is no power. The cell tower stops working. You say, well, why don't they put a generator? Putting a generator with gasoline on the top of every building is just not a practical thing to do. The fire code would have to be changed. The fire department would not be happy, probably right on that. That's not the right solution. When we first came into office, I sat down with everybody and I said, okay, now what could devastate the city and make the city uninhabitable? I suppose, nuclear bomb could, but that's not something you can plan for. But the water tunnels, we have two water tunnels. If one collapsed, we could not inhabit half the city, because if you don't have water, you can't flush the toilets, you can't wash, we
can't
fight
cook.
Fires, you can't cook, you can't do anything. So we've put more money into a new water tunnel than the previous five administrations, something like that, put together. And we've gone right down the list trying to protect ourselves. Con Ed, in all fairness, has put an enormous amount of money in to make them resilient. Now, you can say, wait a second, they just lost all of Manhattan from south of 34th Street. Yes, but we did have 3 feet higher than ever experienced before surge and that sort of thing. And now they've just agreed to put another $250 million in to harden it even more. And in all fairness to them, they came back reasonably quickly. They had to replace some things, but they didn't destroy their whole infrastructure. Our sewage system, we have spent a lot of money. People complain about their water rates, taxes on water. The money goes to make these better. You look in these other counties, they have sewage treatment plants that have been out since Sandy and are still out. Ours, a couple we had to shut down because they were going to get flooded, but 2 days later, they were back up and running. And so we've got to have these utilities do exactly the same thing. And I think it's fair to say that there's not as much backup as you need with AT&T and Verizon, but we are going to pressure them to make sure that the next time something happens, those are better protected. Is if you have phone lines above ground and power lines above ground, a tree's going to always come down. You have to replace it. But at least it's easy to get in there. If there's an enormous number of trees, you have to have an enormous number of workers. Con Ed did, before the storm ever hit, borrow workers from California and all across the country. And there were an awful lot of trees down, so it took them a while, but they did get it back up. Other utility companies didn't have the backup plans and hadn't invested the way Con Ed has, or AT&T in this case has done a better job. Now, Verizon would say, wait a second, we just happen to have one of our main feeders.
Which is right across the street, right over here.
Here, and yeah. There's I think Howard Beach, they had one which went out and just totally destroyed, and that's very hard to recover from that. But what I've done is we've started a couple programs to see what we did, what we could do better, and also to take a look at how we get the city back and make it more resilient. And this guy, Sergey Manosky, and Seth Pinsky, who've been working on these kinds of things before, and they're going to do a big study. And we borrowed a guy who used to work for us from Goldman Sachs. Goldman Sachs was nice enough to give, this is one of their top infrastructure guys, was nice enough to give him a leave of absence to come to work in this group for a few months and to see if we can't help the networks, power, sewage, communications, all of these.
The cell tower issue is obviously as critical as you can find, and maybe the solution is the most difficult, because if the power goes out, as you say, how do you power these things?
Yeah.
And yet with the usage of wireless today, it is absolutely critical.
More and more the young people today don't have landlines.
That's why I was surprised when I read about your payphone challenge, which I thought was
well. The payphones are there. There's something like 11,000 payphones, down from about 35,000 at the high back in the 90s. You know, it's hard. You don't see people lined up at payphones.
I don't even
often.
See payphones anymore.
They are, believe it or not, they are. They're around. And we have this challenge out to our tech community. Maybe it's something you can do with it. You know, you and I.
How to make them more usable.
Yeah, you and I aren't the age of the people I would go to ask for these ideas. Maybe you and I could come up with one of them. But there's an awful lot of young people who just view the world differently. Their whole perspective, they start out with different instincts, I think is the right word. And they're the ones, you and I still have landlines, they're the ones that only have cell phone lines. And they look at us like we're Neanderthals. And, you know, why on earth would you do that? No, and why not be able to take your phone, put it in your pocket when you leave home, never be without it?
Oh, well, absolutely. But how do you have any? Have you heard any suggestions on how that sort of thing morphs into a payphone?
Or do you
just hand out phones?
Wireless phones. We're going to have ways you can give us some ideas. You go to www.nyc.gov. There's going to be, we'll take all the good ideas. We're going to have some, I think we pick 15 when we're all done, and they're going to demonstrate their ideas on March 5th, I think it is, 2013, which we're calling Reinvent Payphones Demo Day. I know you're going to be there.
Oh, I'll be watching.
But it's a good lesson for all of us. And now you can never harden everything 100%, but you want to make sure you can recover. And you make sure that people take the proactive, prophylactic steps in advance. And I think that Con Ed, you know, everybody criticized me. All I'm here is defending Con Ed. No, I'm not defending Con Ed. The numbers are there. Con Ed gets ranked the best of the big utilities across the whole country in terms of number of outages and that sort of thing. We used to have these blackouts in the summer. Last two summers, John, we haven't had them.
No, you're right.
And Con Ed put a few billion dollars in, and good luck to them. So, you know, they're not perfect, and if they make a mistake, I'll be the first one to criticize them. But you got to give them credit when they do something. It's their stockholders who've made the investment. And, yes, you can argue they have an obligation, but they've done it proactively.
I want to switch gears on you a little bit. I had the Chancellor of the Board of Regents, Dr. Merrill Tisch, on earlier this week, and I also talked with Michael Mulgrew. All of this really circled around the teacher evaluation, which the city and the union have not been able to come up with yet. Dennis Walcott mentioned it this week as well. Will you have an agreement before January 17, or will you have a plan, an evaluative plan?
I hope so. It would be in everybody's interest. If we can't come to an agreement, it's going to be very painful because we will lose $250 million or some number like that in state aid. It would be very sad if that's the case. But the city's certainly not going to sign on to any agreement that isn't a real evaluation agreement and one that can be monitored by the public. You read all these stories about the people wanting to send their kids to one school or the other school. This is the public's data, and I want to make sure that we leave this city with laws in place where the public can get the information and the press can get the information to hold everybody's feet to the fire. We're talking this morning. If the Congress eliminates or reduces, caps the amount of deductibility of state and local taxes, New York City, New York State, and a half a dozen other states that provide social services will be decimated. The New York Times had a good editorial about it this morning. DiNapoli had an op-ed piece about if the fiscal cliff were to kick in, how much it would hurt. But New Yorkers will pay an enormous amount of new taxes or higher taxes if they can't deduct state and local taxes. Why are our state and local taxes so high? Because they provide services. Now, conservatives say we shouldn't be providing those services, therefore make it so painful that cities won't and states won't, but we are going to do that anyways. I think the average person, if you make like $160,000 family taxable income, your taxes would go up something like $4,000, if I remember correctly. Don't use the number until I check it, but something like that, because you wouldn't have the ability to deduct state and local taxes. It's some number like that. It's a very significant.
Very big, sure.
Sure. And what I'm also concerned about, there are 5,000 people who pay 50% of our city income tax. If 10% of those people left, just 500 people, be devastating. So and the more expensive you make it, the more likely they are. I'm not sure they're going to go, but some will. You know, the marketplace really does work. So we've got to focus on making sure that the information, for example, I'm going, this is the information of how many people are here, how many people leave. I don't want it hidden, and I don't want the evaluations hidden. Now, having said that, I am, you know, I'm always optimistic. I think
is that
when I've talked about people, the conversations with the UFT and Michael Mulgrew are progressing. Do we get there? I don't know. At some point before the January budget, I've got to start putting in numbers, assuming we don't get the $250 million, and we'll have to start planning. You do that in advance. In January, we have to put our next budget modification for the budget that will be enacted for next year, starting this next July 1st. The law requires it sometime in January. But for the moment, I'm leaving the money in just as a, you know, maybe I don't want to jinx it kind of thing.
Okay, well, is that December 21st date that Dennis Walcott talked about yesterday? Is that a pretty hard date?
I think, well, there's no magical date, but, you know, I told him, pick a date. We picked the 21st. We'll just plan differently. That doesn't mean what we plan is what happens, but we've got at some point, it just takes a while to filter all this information through and to have every agency see what would happen if we have to cut back. Because if you cut back $250 million for the schools, you might want to cut back a little less for schools and something, maybe police, fire, other social services. You know, dollars are dollars. It's all fungible. And we have a total budget. And when one part of our government doesn't get state or federal aid, every part of our government suffers. So hopefully that won't happen.
All right, Mr. Mayor, we'll get to some telephone calls and some questions. It's your turn, and you're going to be up first. It's Carol. Hello, Carol. You've got the mayor. Go ahead.
Hi. Carol?
Carol, are you there? Carol? All right. Well, I'll put Carol on hold, see if we can get Carol back. We'll go to Joe in Rockaway. Hello, Joe. Good morning.
Hi, John. Hi, Mr. Mayor.
Good morning.
Thanks for taking my call. I'd just like to say that with proper planning, you're absolutely right. The Auburn by the Sea development in Rockaways sustained very little flooding damage, and that's because the HBD and the Army Corps of Engineers, and you, I guess, approved the development, you made them increase the topography of the land. So there's very little. They lost power, but virtually no flooding.
Yeah. The real problem, Joe, and I don't have any great solutions to it, is most of the houses, something like 68,000 houses in the floodplain, and we only lost 357 or some number like that. What do you do with all the houses who are that are there now? Nobody. It's impractical to raise them. I don't know how you can protect them. In other places where they have a big storm and lots of open land as the result, a lot of houses carried away, you can build to the better standard like Auburn by the Sea. You're 100% right about that place. But what do you do with the ones here where we really didn't have that? We had the houses right along the beach. The one right at the shoreline got terribly damaged, and the one house in got enormous flood damage, but from the outside, it's structurally sound. So I don't know the right answer, but you're 100% right. Good standards, just like the boardwalks, the better built ones were there. And then in some places, you had two blocks of devastation, two blocks of no devastation, and then two blocks.
Hard to plan.
Yeah, I mean, some of those things are because of what's under the ocean. The waves come in differently. If there's a rock ledge or something, it would, I don't know if it makes it better or worse, but is different.
All right. Thank you, Joe. Let's see if we can get Carol back here. Carol, you there? Good morning.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Hi. I'm happy about the number 7 line being extended in Manhattan. I live on the west side. But what about extending it the other way, in further east in Queens, because those people after the last number 7 line stop in Main Street Flushing, there's no train transportation, only buses.
Carol, you're 100% right. We stopped building subways in the, I guess, like the early 20s. Subways were started in 1900. The IRT was started in 1900, if I remember, and ended built in finished in 04. The idea was Wall Street to Harlem in 12 minutes. I don't know if they ever met that. Maybe late at night without any stops, full board.
All green lights all
right,
the way.
Yeah, all the way. But we, as the population has moved further to the east and to the north in the Bronx and east in Brooklyn and in particular in Queens and to the south shore of Staten Island, none of those places have good mass transit. And, you know, there's always this battle. We should be moving some of the firehouses. We tried that. We did some. But our firehouses are sited where the population used to live. And they were sited based on horse-drawn and man-drawn fire engines getting to
how far they could
go.
Sure,
right. I don't know that political will exists to do that. It's very controversial. Extending the subway lines is clearly something you should do. If all federal monies were available for anything and you had equal chance of getting them, you could make the decision rather than making a subway line better, you should make it longer, or there's those kinds of things. Unfortunately, our state government has not been willing to give us money to extend the subway lines out into these ill-served areas, Staten Island and Queens and the Bronx in particular. And what I would suggest you do is call your local congressman or certainly your local state senator and state assembly person and get them to demand that they come up with money. The New York City taxpayers paid for the extension of the 7 line going down the west side. We don't have enough money to extend the subway lines going north and east. And that the state's got to do that. And remember, the subways are a state agency. The city provides some help. The city provides security. But it's a state agency. And so, you know, call the state your state legislator and say, hey, what about it?
All right. I think we have time real fast here. One more time with John in Queens. John, right to your question, please.
Hi. To save pedestrian lives and raise revenue for the city as well as other benefits, I'm suggesting that the mayor direct the police to enforce pedestrian traffic law and write tickets for people who cross against the light or stand in the street while they're waiting for the
John,
light.
John, it would be a great idea because it would get people to not stand in the street and not cross. I think Rudy tried ticket jaywalkers. From a practical point of view, the cops aren't going to do it. The public won't stand for it. It's not a bad idea. I just think in a real sense, we're not going to get it done. done. So, anyways.
You see, I know you're aware that they want to have a lawsuit against the red light cameras.
Of course, there's always...
Timing is off on the yellow.
Right, yeah. I actually stopped at a red light, and I saw the countdown clock with a hand, and, you know, and then and nobody ran across, but there was nobody on the street corner at the time.
Have yourself a good week, Mr. Mayor. Thank you, as always, for coming in this morning, making the effort. We appreciate it very much. Coming up in our next hour, David Gregory from Meet the Press.